Hey guys, Brandon here. Sorry about the late episode. We had all kinds of problems this week. We had a couple guys that had to leave early just before Hype Train. So if you don't hear Big D or Chris for the rest of the episode, that's why. You may notice that my audio is completely missing from the entire episode. And that's because my computer decided to do a hard crash reboot and not save the backup file for Audacity. So I apologize for the late episode and for you guys not being able to hear my spectacular voice throughout this whole series. I hope everybody enjoys our 30th episode.
Welcome, and you're listening to Geekologist Radio, a Queued Up Media Group production. Now,
shut up and sit down.
Hey, it's Derek, and welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through our queue, into our gaming systems, and ride the hype train from the past and into the future. Let's introduce our crew for tonight's cast. First up, fresh out of PAX East, Chris Two Wolves.
What's up, guys? It's been a hell of a week. It was a tiring weekend. Lots of fun, lots of good people, and it's fun to be around people when you can be yourself, and that's what PAX East is all about.
And you didn't have to go like halfway across the country.
No, hour and 45 minutes. I was a pretty quick, and I just had to Uber everywhere. It's the first time I've ever Ubered ever in my life.
Nice. So I Ubered for the first time in Vegas a few weeks back, and it was like, oh, this is remarkably easy, and I see why people do it.
I didn't realize how chatty the drivers were. Man, they're super chatty. Like, they want to talk to you about everything. And you're like, oh, okay, dude. All right, let's have a conversation. It was kind of weird. My only bitch about Uber was, like, sometimes you'd get charged more than what it said the Uber price was. Like, you'd hit the Uber for the Uber X, and then it'd say, oh, it's, like, $8. And then all of a sudden you get charged, like, $10.50, and you're like, hey, where'd that extra couple bucks come from?
Yeah, that's so you get paid, you get charged based on, like, if there's, especially during, like, if you go during a sports game or anything like that, they have rates, the variable rates for sprees. One of my coworkers also, what his other second job is he's an Uber driver.
Yeah, but don't you click the button, though? Doesn't that rate, isn't it rate locked?
It does. Here's a couple of things. One, the first day that I was at PAX, totally went to the wrong hotel, figured out where it was. So Uber was $8. Okay. As soon as they realized PAX was going on, Uber then became $19 to go to the same exact spot on the way back. So it automatically doubled in price. So then the guy was like, oh, the traffic's crazy. Do you mind if I go on the highway? And we were like, shit, I don't care. Just go on the highway. Like, just get me back to where, oh, guess what? Highway route, an extra $3. Yep. I'm like, he didn't tell you that until after I got my thing and it pinged. It was like, hey, your Uber cost you an additional blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, bastard. Why didn't he tell me it was costing me more money?
He's like, you said this. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, you said it was okay to take the highway. Yeah. So all in all, though, it
now
was a lot of
fun. Now you know the highway question.
No, you didn't get the PAX Eeks or the PAX Pox, did you?
No PAX Pox, just PAX allergies. My allergies are off the Richter scale right now, so it's been a hell of a week, man. I came back with full intentions of writing, but I have a 65-hour work week that I had ahead of me prior to coming off for this weekend, so just it's been crazy. I have a lot of stuff and a lot of interviews, stuff that I've been kind of writing, jotting down notes, so there's going to be things coming out here probably within the next 4 to 5 days. Just it's going to feel like a machine gun just because there's so many people I talk to. It was kind of bananas. There was a lot more interviews that were like off the cuff and on the spot. Or if I saw something I really liked and I handed somebody my card and said, hey, listen, if you have a spot, and then I'd get a text message cause they'd ask for my phone number. Hey, I'm open and available, blah, blah, blah. Are you available? Yeah, sure. So, one of those games, included Hob, which was at, I know it was at PAX Prime when you went. I didn't see it at South, but they had it at East, and I was with Wonder, who is one of their head devs and also a PR rep, and when they won Game of Show, which was pretty awesome, so I got to BS with her a little bit about that, too.
That game's going to be amazing. It's made by the same people that produced Torchlight, which, if you don't know, waving geek flag here. Those actually were originally Blizzard employees. They were the still guys who were behind Diablo. The
is
original.
That game coming to console?
It's re.
Yes.
It is. It's coming to PS. It's a PS4. It's console exclusive to PS4. But no. It is coming to PC and Steam. Yeah. The thing of it is the character looks like Orko. So He-Man. All right. So I said that to her, and she starts laughing. And she goes, "Well, he's in a desolate world, and he's trying to recreate." And I look at her, and I said, "So this is Wally." And she starts laughing, like, really loud. She's like, "You're like the second person today to say that." It's basically, that's the theme. It's like a world that's kind of desolate, and you're trying to rebuild it, and you're the only person to do so. And it's really puzzle-based. It reminded me a lot of just a clear Legend of Zelda, like, in the puzzle sense. Very mechanical. So, and there's no talking. The environment tells the story, which I thought was really, really cool, and I got a gist. Because I was in a demo that they assume was going to be about 20 to 25 minutes, and on average it was taking people at PAX about 40. So they weren't anticipating how difficult it was going to be to get through some of the parts. And the other kind of cool thing is if you've played some of those old 8-bit and 16-bit games, like if you did a puzzle on one side, you'd go around to the other side and have to do the similar puzzle in order to unlock something. That's kind of how this is. So if you go and do something on one end, you have to go do it on the other end, and you have to figure out how to get to there, which nice. I thought was cool.
And I loved me some Torchlight. I was sad Torchlight 2 didn't come to console. I played it on PC, but man, I wish I hope that one comes in. Excellent.
Oh, Torchlight 2 on console on PC is awesome because of all the mod support.
Yeah, but the auto targeting is not as great because console made auto targeting pretty awesome on that one. I love that part of it.
True.
So Damien, you're here as well. What's up with you, my man?
Yes, I am. Hey, you know, trying to get some articles out as well. Work's been, you know, adulting and real work. Has been kind of getting in the place of that, but probably the same time frame. I'll be shooting out about 3 or 4 articles. So
nice.
Looking forward to that.
And I thought we might have been done with the introductions, but we have a special guest, the Big D's here. Hey, man.
What's going on, fellas? Happy to be here. We'll have some fun tonight.
Yeah. Big D is sitting there in the background like, introduce me. I want to say stuff. I'm a good puppy. Let me talk. Let me give my opinions. All right. So everybody listening, this is if you're a round numberist, this is a milestone episode of episode 30 of Geekologist Radio, and also I'll kind of let Damien talk about a little group we're associated with now that's hosting us.
So we have officially joined. We've been talking about it for like ever now, leading up to this, but we are officially part of Ninja Pancake Network. It's been a long time coming, a lot of reworking the show and everything like that, but it's amazing to be able to finally be in with these great people.
What is Ninja Pancakes to the people who don't know?
So Ninja Pancakes is a website of hosts of various... this is what happens. You get derailed by your co-host when you're on here, and he starts making pancake.
I can't make pancakes, so I was just making ninja moves.
It's pancakes in the shape of ninja stars, is what it is. It's what this
there
is.
There you go.
But
fly it, dude! If you could make flying ninja
stars, they have
a
mold.
That would
be
awesome.
Easily do that.
Just chuck them into your kids' mouths and just get.
Oh,
there you go.
They'd
be breakfast.
Great for dipping. Use the ends. Oh man, that'd be great.
Right?
Oh man. So if you've heard of some shows like Geek Squash, which is kind of interesting with them because since we talk mostly about things that are from the either into the future or if you're looking for something that's that's like that, but it's like 80s and 90s. You go check them out. They're on there, and I'm looking forward to the potential of some mashup content. You know, the old school versus new school. It could be pretty damn fun. Even though it's gonna, with all of our age group and everything, it's gonna be hard for us not to probably align with the old school content. So we're gonna have to bring our A game.
Nice. Well, guys, that's where you can find us in another location now on the Ninja Pancake Network. And thanks for them for finding us out, giving us a shot, giving us a listen, and passing their test and posting us on their site. But let's go ahead.
Wiki, what's in our queue?
Round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
All right, so The Leftovers is HBO show. It's basically when the rapture happens.
It takes place during the rapture.
And then all of a sudden, this is a show about the people who are left, and what's left is a large percentage of the population, but without clear answers on to why their friends and family members and people who they thought were good, not good, why this good person didn't go, why this not good person went, and all this other stuff, but also with all these other questions, because the world is much bigger than what they thought it was. It's sort of the theme behind it.
Yeah. And it's got if you've seen Stephen King's The Last Stand, it's got a kind of feel similar to that, kind of a foreboding mm-hmm. feeling, and that's just within I've seen the first five episodes.
So. I've seen about the same amount. I lost track how many I saw. Shiny things happened. I got disinterested and stopped watching it. But it definitely didn't. It didn't have a strong enough pace for me, and kind of kept asking questions without answers and had some real slow points. And so I found that other shows definitely interest me a lot more and made stepping away from it a little easier.
This final season is what I'm trying to get caught up to, because the final season is what looks like it's going to pull me in. And so it's like, okay, gotta get through all this. Still haven't got to middle out. I will get there, I promise.
Okay. he's sidetracking Silicon Valley to watch The Leftovers. I highly recommend sidetracking The Leftovers.
Oh, wow. Silicon Valley. Yeah, so hearing The Leftovers just sounds like just lazy storytelling. Like, you know, world ends, blah, 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 who's left over. I actually thought you were talking about an NBC comedy show that is on right now about the same exact damn thing. But you know what I mean? Like, it's so hard to tell the difference, because it really, to me, is like lazy storytelling. It's like, you know, come up with a different way to grasp people besides zombies.
Yeah, because there's because like The Last Man on Earth, that's the one that's like the same concept, but it's a comedy.
Yeah.
But there's a lot, like most mm-hmm. of the world gets taken on a few sleeves. So this is kind of like the reverse, but a very serious introspective drama. Now,
well, introspective drama, you could have the Lost was a good way to do that in a unique way with a good storytelling, at least for the first season.
It just needed overall plot. It didn't have overall plot. It had episode plot.
Yeah.
It didn't have overall plot.
No.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I choose to watch good television.
I'm perfectly okay with that decision. So the two people watching Legion.
First off. Yeah, first off, Legion, so episode or chapter 5 was just amazing. Chapter 6 is a split, it's kind of split down the middle. There's parts of it that you're like, oh, this is really cool. Other parts you're like, it seems like it's kind of like one of the slower episodes of The Walking Dead. But then they drop some bombshells where they start mentioning and they start.
You're going to have to get more specific. There's a lot of slow episodes of Walking Dead.
Well, it's just like I'm saying, it's one of the first slower episodes that Legion has had. Granted, it's only had six chapters so far, but this one they're ramping up to reveal who his father is. And in this, they talk about, you know, your father gave you up. But then they talk about, then someone else comes in and talks about how he was trying to hide him from the parasite that's got a hold of him and everything. And so, and that you find out then the parasite's all, I had you in the womb. And so there's a lot of kind of weird conversations going around, and then it just cuts off at the end, and you're like, wait, okay. Which, it's something that Legion does. They leave you on cliffhangers. I'm
so,
go ahead.
Is the show good, or is it a product of the fact that it's on a network that it doesn't require it to be very good in order to be re-upped for a second season?
So it's good. Yeah, it's good, but it's a different type of television. It's you have to think when you watch it, and sometimes it's not what you want. Sometimes when you're watching Marvel, you just want to sit back and be entertained. Legion is one that you have to really think, and if I'm watching it and I'm not looking, if I'm not watching, it's not something you can have in the background and be doing something else. You have to pay attention to the show. Some shows you can have them on, you can enjoy them, but you have to kind of, you can do other things. I feel like with Legion, most of the time, if I turn my head away from a scene, I'm having to rewatch like 5 minutes of the show just to be able to understand the rest of it.
Are you watching Big Little Lies? I'll tell you what. I watch it now on Sunday nights with my wife, who caught up with it while I was gone. And this week's episode, it's starting to get really, really good. Really crappy. The season finale has been leaked, so that information's out to the public. So I'm trying to keep audio and video dark on that. I don't want to know what's going on. But they added some complexities to a few more characters, which I think is really interesting. And I have no idea what is going on with this creepy kid. So like it makes it more and more. But here's the thing. Reese Witherspoon has found the gentleman who, well, I mean, in the context of the show, had raped her, and so knows where he lives, and so in this upcoming episode, it appears that they're going to go find this guy, and they keep leaning back and showing her shooting guns, so you would think, or at least they're trying to portray it as this is where the mystery is headed, but I like the concept that all of the women all have little lies. And I don't want to ruin this episode for you, but you learn one that Reese Witherspoon has, which totally threw me for a complete loop. So good show. I thought I was going to be out after maybe the second episode, and then it just kept going and going and going. And so I really enjoy the fact that it's a female ensemble cast, I think is really, really good, cool. And the fact that the storyline still has a murder mystery to it that I'm unsure of where it's going currently, I think is what still has me. So if you get a chance, you can catch it up. It's really quick on HBO. They're hour episodes, so it does take a little bit longer, but they're on Sunday nights. It's pretty nice. So I'll watch Walking Dead, and then as soon as Walking Dead's over, I go right over to Big Little Lies. So super helpful. I know that we're going to be talking about Kong.
Yes. So
how about we talk about The Walking Dead?
No, we can talk. No, we're going to talk about Kong. Kong actually, so Kong had to come out, and it did something that films in its genre usually don't do, and it took first place.
At least it's not High Life.
It took first place. It took first place away from Logan.
Yeah, but that's almost all new movies. For
you're talking about first place after what, 3 weeks?
No. After 1 week.
Logan's been out
for... It was
1 week, but still. Kong's a big title, big name cast, a lot of production behind it. That's not uncommon for a new release to have a bigger weekend.
But the thing is about this film, it... Okay, first off, the CG is amazing. So you know, like a lot of times when you have a computer-generated character, that everything might look great, but they lose something in the eyes, right? Like the eyes do not reflect emotion.
Tarkin.
Every beast.
Was that a teacher's cough?
every beast, every you know, Kong himself, the other things that are in it, everything displays so much emotion in the eyes that I was like, that is the fact that it's a movie that if you're going to create something CG, Walking Dead, you better be paying attention. You need you need to put yourself up against the quality that's in this. Just strictly, just from a viewer's standpoint, it was phenomenal. The acting was perfect. Now, an interesting thing about the acting in this that I think would have made the film not as good as it was that, so the two characters were supposed to be recast, were supposed to be played by different people. John C. Reilly's character was actually supposed to be played by Michael Keaton.
Okay. So, and, giving it more of a humorous spin.
And if Michael Keaton had played the role, I know he's good with, you know, we've seen him in Multiplicity, things like that. He can do a comedic role, but I felt though, like, if he was in the role, I think it would have, John C. Reilly, he steals the show. Like, his ability, like, because he can do, we've seen him in, like, Gangs of New York and stuff like that. He can play serious roles.
He has good but, acting range. He can go really serious, and he can go really funny, and it's not a lot of people can go both, and he can be really, really funny. He can stand alongside Will Ferrell and be just as funny. That's great.
Yeah, and his character is kind of, I didn't expect it to be as compelling as this. Now, the other character is, so when you go and you see the original Spider-Man, and he got J.K. Simmons?
Yeah.
The actor, so J.K. Simmons was supposed to play the Apocalypse Now style general, but instead it went to, due to scheduling conflicts and things like that, it wound up going to Samuel L. Jackson. He stepped in. Samuel L. Jackson was a secondary choice, but the fact that it went to Samuel L. Jackson, again, made the movie.
What does my wallet say?
It's two characters that, had it gone with their original choices that they had, I don't think the film would have been as strong as it was. Even though the rest of the cast is phenomenal, I don't think it would have hit on the same emotion and stuff that it did. I will hold off on any more talk on it. I'm writing a very spoilerific article on it, but this film has me excited for everything from my childhood.
And it had a good box office, but it also got 79% Rotten Tomatoes. So critically, it's doing fine. So that's the one thing about a big monster movie like this, is that it can tank critically. And being above 70% on both critically and fan-wise on Rotten Tomatoes, that's a good sign all around. So yeah, but it's coming out
It came out at a good time. Yeah, too. March is an early time. You're not going against major blockbusters. Aside from Logan, it's not coming against anybody that it's going to compete against. Coming up behind it, there's not a lot of movies coming behind.
Yeah,
it
there
right
is.
Now.
There's we have Ghost in the Shell and Ghost in the Shell, and then we have Power Rangers.
Ghost in the Shell is Power Rangers niche and terrible. Ghost in the Shell, very niche. It's like, those are. If you asked 10 people off the street who King Kong was, they'd know. If you asked 10 people off the street who Ghost in the Shell was, they wouldn't. So,
but the one thing I will suggest you do is, before you see this, make sure you've seen the Bryan Cranston Godzilla.
Is it a continuation?
Just a suggestion.
Hmm.
Well, it takes place in 1974, so how would it be a continuation story?
That's
Godzilla
true.
Takes
it
place
a
present.
Space. It's got, okay.
But what I'm saying is, see Godzilla first, and then watch with a Westworld-style eye.
I like it. All right, now, in the middle of a little bit of conversation earlier, I finished my beer from the start of the episode. So I had to go downstairs and grab a good beer. I was out of good beer. Ended up having to grab a Miller Lite from August that was here from a party. So that's what we're doing right now, gentlemen. I'm not too happy about that decision. Whoa. It's not bad beer, but it's not nearly as good. Yeah.
Well, bad choices are made when you're drinking. And also, after the first one, they all kind of taste similar. So you just get past it.
I'm on
first
number two right now, and we're on Walking Dead, Bury Me Here. All right. So can we just say thank you to Death to Pacifism on The Walking Dead? Borgit's pacifism, gone. Ezekiel's pacifism, gone. Get out of here. Let's rise up.
But the other thing is didn't we call this? What did we talk about when as soon as the kid started talking to Carol, we're like, oh God, kid, you can't talk to Carol. If you're anything younger than what most adults would consider a grown adult, stay the hell away from Carol. You're gonna die.
get you some cookies. But yeah, no, but this episode though, Walking Dead's character deaths are very formulaic when it's not one of like the main ones, like the ones that have been there for seasons. And this one, just right away, they're giving this character loving backstory. Like, right away, like, Benjamin's gonna die. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, his brother loves him. Benjamin's gonna die. Everybody likes Benjamin. Benjamin's gonna die. So,
yeah, you know, to me, like the episode, there were a lot of beats that it hit that you knew were coming, and everything about the episode, every event that came across from, you know, after 3 minutes in, knowing that kid was going to croak, knowing that Morgan was going to cross a line, knowing that they were going to convince the king to take up arms and join the fight, you knew that all of those things were going to happen at some point, and they all, so this episode kind of took care of a lot of things that had to happen in the story. But to me, the most interesting part about it was the fact that Morgan has kind of been like a moral center for a little while. You know, if you remember when he first reappeared in Alexandria and he sees what Rick has kind of become and seeing his reaction to that, you know, he's kind of been like this moral center for the group. And to even see him sort of coming to grips with the fact that, you know, you can't be all pacifist all the time, and sometimes you have to make some tough choices and go kill people. And you know, seeing him kind of take somebody's life in his hands, I think that sort of, that was powerful. And I think that raised a lot of questions for viewers who were sort of hanging on that, you know, his anti-violence and, you know, that whole line about violence against somebody else is a strike against yourself, that whole thing.
Yeah. See, I really thought Morgan had set up that roadblock in the grave, because I completely forgot that Richard was digging that grave at the beginning of the episode. I saw it and I was just like, man, that reminds me of Clear, which I've said before, that's my favorite episode, the one where they find Morgan. That has still been my favorite episode of The Walking Dead. I was just like, Morgan did this. And then when they're coming back and then he's flipping out and you see him just having flashbacks of his little compound that he had, I was like, he did this. And it made Morgan flip that switch. But, oh, when he drops it in Richard's apartment, I was like, oh, it was him. And that, having Richard do it in the way that Morgan did Clear, made that switch from Morgan click, because it made him all those memories of, like, all of these signs and using stuff as a barricade. And, oh, man. And the plot twist, because you said everything was formulaic, and I even said a lot of stuff too. I did not see Morgan killing Richard by throating him out and slamming his head on the cement. That was as big a surprise as Morgan dying. That was a big surprise for me, for him switching to that level for me in this episode.
No, I was going to say that Richard's point was to get them to that point. So however it was, whether it was his death or not, I don't know if he knew that Morgan was going to be upset about that in that way, only because I don't know if he knew about Clear, because as soon as I saw the shopping carts, that's immediately where my head went back to, and then the flashbacks kind of went back to that place that he was at when Rick found him the second time. But man, whatever Richard's intent was, he completed it, because the intent was to get the king and everybody to take arms against this whole group of Negan and his followers. And that's exactly what's going to be happening.
And he got that. Yeah.
Yeah. What's interesting about it is, where does Morgan as a character go from here? You saw him almost kind of lose his mind because he lost those, you know, that moral scaffolding that he was standing on just kind of got taken right out from under him. And those rules that he learned from the guy that taught him his, you know, fighting style and all that, mm-hmm. you know, that hanging on to those moral rules that he set for himself is what helped him hold himself together. So, you know, is he able to sort of reshape those rules and give himself a new moral foundation, or does he just sort of kind of deteriorate and go off the deep end moving forward? I'm interested to see where that goes.
Yeah,
this whole episode did remind me a lot, like what you were saying, KJ. It reminded me of Claire, and seeing his reaction and everything, and then it was the interesting the switch that went on, where instead of him leaving, Carol said, you know, pulls in and says, "You can leave without leaving," and then now he's staying in her house that she had, and she's now back in the kingdom.
Yes, because please, Morgan, don't go kill Negan too. Sasha and Rosita are already screwing things up on Rick's plan as is. Don't need somebody else going to screw things up and put the Savior's focus on both the kingdom and Alexandria when you have rogues going in there to try to kill Negan. Just stay back, Morgan. It's going to be okay. But it definitely made Morgan's memory click to his son. Because I think the switch for him was his son. It was like this.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin was taking his son's place as he was raising him, and that brought it all back, and that pushed him over.
Yeah, because he even makes a mistake, and he calls his son's name.
Yeah, I forget his son's name at this point. But yeah, he calls his son's name out, and they're like, "Who?" And we get it back, because even I heard that too, and I was like, "That's not that kid's name." And it's, oh yeah, but we get Deadly Morgan back with this, but we also get Deadly Carol back. Yeah, get two mm-hmm. deadly characters back, two pacifists and no longer pacifists. Let's get Violent and the Walking Dead. Stop talking.
Except for the thing is right at the end there again. It's like Carol comes up. Oh, a child. Oh, a child. And she's like sitting there planning stuff, trying to be all motherly with the child. It's like, no, Carol, don't. By now, you know what happens.
No, it's all right, though. It's all right. She can do that. It's like, because she's ready to shoot. And Ezekiel's like, he's like, look, a lot of things need to happen before we go to war. We need to lay the foundation. And the foundation is this needs to be a kingdom of a sustainable society that can support fighters. And that's what he's ground. He burned away all of the pacifistness. They got rid of the weevils of the fruit and stuff. They got rid of that. And it's like, all right, this is what we need to do. And we're going into it right now. Because Richard's been trying to goad Ezekiel into this for a while. He tried it with Daryl and Carol. He's like, oh, we're going to get him to go kill Carol. And Daryl's like, the hell you are. And he tried with his own suicide. That didn't work either. It finally worked when Benjamin died and Morgan killed him. So it's finally his plan of goading them, the Saviors and Ezekiel, has finally worked.
So did anybody else think that when they first brought up the stuff about the weevils that it was that they were planted there? Like initially when they talked about it, I was like, did someone infect?
No, they just happened to get in there. Yeah. It's just a side story that kind of parallels their own situation. We need to clear this out so we can start again and move forward with better focus and get rid of all the bad.
But these last three episodes, though, Ezekiel has been trying to get Carol to come back to the kingdoms in order to train them. Like, the part where he keeps bringing her things and keeps trying to talk to her, he wants her to come back. And the reason why he wants her to come back is to train up the people there. I don't think that this was something that just switched all of a sudden because of the death of Richard. Now, okay, now we want to train the kingdom to prepare them. I think he's been wanting that to happen. But there hasn't been a reason for Carol to come back. And now that she is back, you know, because of remember, she talked to Morgan and found out really what happened to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what pissed her off. And it was like, oh, hell, like, you're going to take out all of us? No, that's not going to happen now. So you combine that with Morgan's state of mind, and that's the reason why she came back. It has nothing to do with the kingdom or anybody else. It's all about her family of who she
right,
still
because
has
because Carol
left.
Had seen her, like, she was always fighting enemies that were invading her friends. And she thought that Rick and them had killed all the Saviors. And she was clear. It was all good. Zombies and surviving, only things left. And as long as she's not around to get anybody else killed, she's fine. Once she finds out that both the kingdom and Alexandria are both still in dire jeopardy from the Saviors, she's like, oh, Well, it doesn't matter if I cause anyone else's death, because these people are killing everybody at a much greater rate and without cause than I was. I can get back into that. To me, that was Carol's just like justification. It's like, oh, well, I can get back in now because people are dying anyway.
There's one big problem, though. There's still not enough guns.
Yeah.
There's not enough guns. There's not enough ammunition.
If you had a great prediction, Chris, in the Discord, do it.
I'm saying it. And I really feel like what's going to happen is Carol is going to go to this all-women's camp and play that victim again. Like, oh, I was battered. I was beat. Ugh. Get in there, be the bull, and then boom. Take out – either gain trust – or just be able to figure out a way to take all the stuff and grab all the weapons. But I feel like this is Carol's moment right now. What if we all thought that Maggie was going to be the other lead? Carol's the black sheep who's going to end up being the other lead in this thing, and she's going to be the one who's going to take them to where they need
she's
to go.
She's a chameleon, and they definitely try to find ways to use her chameleonness to the advantage of the show, and I love that. I can't wait to see that, because I think there would be a miss to not use that as a plot element in the upcoming episode.
Thing is, we haven't seen Maggie. We haven't seen Carl in, six episodes now. I mean, it's been forever.
We saw Maggie just like the beginning of that one. That was it. So, yeah, we need to get back to Hilltop and reorganize there. But, yeah, let's.
Carl's just busy looking like a jack-o-lantern.
I know Dave wants to see more of the takers. He wants to see more of the trash heap people. He loves those people.
I was thinking about them, and they've been driving me nuts. And you go back through some of the slow reveals of some of the quirkier characters. And I remember the first time Michonne shows up on camera, and she's got the two walkers on leashes, and she's got that hood and a sword. And nothing like that had ever been in the show before. And that moment, I kind of went, wait, what? But then you get to know her and you're like, okay, yeah, this fits. When you meet King Ezekiel for the first time, you kind of go, wait, what? But then you kind of hear the backstory behind it. You see, characters' very natural reaction to laugh them off at first. But then, you understand the whole creating this this other world where we have, this kingdom and all that. And you go, okay, the trashy trash garbage people, I don't know what planet they're from, the way they speak. All of a sudden they're just like, me get guns, you make now. I don't know what's happening there. It sounds like, a bad 50s Western where, they have a white guy pretending to be a Native American with that like generic old Western Native American accent. That's what I think.
Come on now,
talk. It's just awful.
Damien, we talked about
making fun of Charles and Heston's Mountain Men. Come on now.
We talked about a group that is still lurking on the outside that nobody wants to talk about, and then I saw in the episode with Michonne and with Rick, that some of the walkers that were chasing after him in the carnival had their arms that were wrapped. There was still somebody in last episode that was creeping on the outside, and they showed the shadow for like 1 second, and they pulled away, and it was just for a brief moment in that episode. But they keep doing this all along. I feel like they're going to introduce this group
soon. Which is good,
because
they can't just like have too much separation between one ending and the next. They need to have a constant threat, because the show has always had critical lulls during its time of safety. You can't stay safe too long on this show.
Well, because the thing is there's not good, with the way the storyline that it follows, there isn't time for a lull, because all I'm saying is if you've seen The Hobbit or you've read The Hobbit, there's a battle of a bunch of armies. When you don't have a certain head, of a group, what happens? We talk about power void.
Yes.
There's going Stuff's to be, gonna oh, you're being introduced to all the big players. Yeah, sure, we're going to gang up and we're going to fight. But then after that's over, then who's going to fill that? Who's going to be king?
Yeah, everybody.
There's going to be a fight.
Everybody
for the
knows where everybody else is and exists. So, yes, setting that table up, they've been doing a nice job underlying setting that table up with how the Takers
much
are
bigger
acting,
world.
How Rick and Michonne had the Michonne's dialogue to Rick and getting his mindset set up to that. So I'm curious to see how those pieces get moved further along. All right. So now that we're done with what we're watching, let's go with what we're gaming on. All right, so Destiny had its live stream number 2 of 35, and they dropped some stuff. I think Chris already fell asleep. He was like hopping around earlier.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, who cares?
No, hey, bring
I'm,
it back.
I'm sorry.
Come on, no, bring I'm it back. Bolt of Glass. That's like yep. Okay. I got through that stuff, went right, and then I got the gear, and I'm like, oh, it's so cool. And then it's like, the expansion came out, and then it went obsolete. And to me, this is the thing. Is
Bolt of Glass, Breath of the Wild.
Right now, what we're looking at is this.
I don't have.
This is nostalgia. So this is what a 2.5 year back nostalgia. Like I say, you can't even find a Nintendo Classic, and that's years of nostalgia going back. This is just a little nostalgia for people to go back, give them a reason and an incentive to go back and play some of this older content. And every year, they get these Triumph books that they could take forward, and this one's 12 pages, so you get a new quest from the speaker that has the 12 forms. So,
because nothing else goes forward.
Well, yeah, in terms of going forward, yeah, that's it.
That's what stopped me from playing altogether. Nothing else goes forward.
But the thing is that I want to have those guns back. See, for me,
period.
Some of my favorite guns came from
yeah. Mythoclass.
Yes, I want the Mythoclass.
The drop rate's going to be higher.
I get that.
Let's get you a Mythoclass. Let's do it.
Yes.
The problem is, here's my problem with this, and I get that everybody wants to go back and to do Crota, and everybody wants to go back to do Vault of Glass, but I also want to go back and play 8-bit Mario, but it's not quite as fun as the first time I played 8-bit Mario. Do you know what I mean? So it's great nostalgia for a second, and then you get a gun that you worked your ass off to get, right? And it was a special drop, and you had to run through that thing I don't know how many times in order to try to get that or whatever it was at the time. And now you just are given it. It's like, okay, well, you get it. Okay, great. Well, it doesn't have the same meaning. So none of it has the same meaning.
I would say
anymore.
That, yeah.
I tell you why it's different for me. What's different for me is the fact that, you know, when you're looking at going back and playing an 8-bit Mario, you're looking at a standalone game. The draw of those raids, as much as it's about great mechanics, to me it was never about the weapons. It was never about loot. I don't care. It's about the shared experience that you're having, especially if you get to game with people that you know or friends or clanmates. And getting to go back and reapproach Vault of Glass with some people maybe that came late to the game and having to learn those mechanics and execute them at a high level again to get through it because the light level's up. And same thing with Crota, you know, instead of just having a hunter breeze through 3/4 of it solo and you just sit around to have to go through the mechanics and fight at a high light level. Yeah, Fouts is pointing at himself because that's pretty much how he does it. To me, it's about having that shared experience again and going through those again before we get a whole batch of new ones.
And I like the challenge of it, too, because like you're going to get challenge modes in these new raids. So that's going to be something we haven't seen in these raids, to do these raids in a different mechanic, coming in with veterans, taking people through who haven't done it before, or going back to like, hey, remember when so-and-so did this right here? Oh, yeah, that was crazy. And I remember when you used to be able to do this in this fight, and then seeing, and also like, okay, this is the challenge mode. Now we're actually putting a challenge to it and coming together as a team and succeeding over those challenges, even though you don't need the loot. Because even some of the raids, some of the loot was just, you didn't really need in some scenarios, but doing it to complete the challenge either as yourself as an accomplishment or as a team, that's a huge part of it. And that's what excites me is going back and challenging myself and team to do that.
The challenge mode will be pushing the Oracle off the back edge.
You can't push an Oracle.
Oracle off the back edge.
The Templar.
Yeah, I think the nice part about this is, to Big D's point, the fact that there's like the camaraderie, and there's a lot of clan members and in different groups, and I'm not speaking about Uprising in general, but that go away for a while, right? And when new content comes, it's people you haven't seen in a long time, because it tends to draw people back again. So they're busy playing other games, and even if it's just for a weekend, you get to bullshit again and kind of have that moment, at least for a little bit. And what's going to end up happening, obviously, in the next 3 months is you're going to get D2, and that's going to start the steamroll, and everybody's going to start having that conversation. And so they have about a 2.5 month gap here where they can kind of have everybody coming back to play these. And I don't think this is going to last over the summer. I think this is going to be a very short stint where everybody's excited about it. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it'll be, okay, let's talk about Destiny 2.
Yeah, because for me, I want a reason to put down Breath of the Wild. Just one reason, one night.
Yeah, I have one. It's Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yep, Dave?
It's been nice because we've even seen a little bit of a bump already, because some people are feeling the pressure to try and get their flawless run on Crota before the new content drops and the new light levels, so you can kind of go through it when it's sort of on easy mode. So all of a sudden this past week I've been on 3 or 4 different flawless runs just to try and help folks get their flawless, and it's been fun.
Yeah, so Challenge of Elders is going to 390. We do know the Crota Raid, the two challenge modes will be Deathsinger and Crota, and both will be unlocked the same week, unlike other raids where it'll be just one each week. You could do them both per run through. We don't know where they are yet. Yeah. The challenge modes for that raid will be unlocked, but all the challenge modes in that raid will be unlocked at that time. Not like Wrath of the Machine, or King's Fall, where it's only one each week or something like that. Yeah. But we're also getting new strikes. We're getting Daybreak strikes, which I think as just a fun factor, it's Nightfall. It's an exact Nightfall, but with a Mayhem modifier. Faster grenades, faster supercharges.
Hulk smash!
Hammer Titans, Golden Guns, lots of Tickle Fingers, just blowing everything up.
Wait. Tickle Fingers.
Yeah, if you're going, yes, I can put up another Warlock bubble, you're doing it wrong.
No, what about, no, just bubble train it.
Well, if you're bubble training it because the ads are one-shot sniper shots to the chest because the weapons are light, then that could be fun. But that's like a stretch. Then that's like, okay, we're done with that. Everybody switch back to something else that's a little more fun.
Yeah, icebreaker, just icebreaker and bubble.
Okay. But rainbow modifiers are coming back, though. If y'all remember rainbow modifiers, where it was Solar, Arc, and Voidborn all active simultaneously? So bring out your 400 Zalos, gentlemen, because that's your Arc, and then figure out your other two in your other slots, because that's your only... Elemental primary, because
are they not bringing the elementals back to the Vault of Glass?
Rumor only.
They should just bring back everything.
The Vault of Glass drops will be elemental 400. We don't know for sure. So, but with Mythoclast coming back, that's a solo primary. So if you get a Mythoclast drop,
yeah,
you can do that one.
Fatebringer.
Yeah, but you can't. Yeah, that's what. Yeah, that's what 180 or whatever. Yeah, but we also know stuff is moving forward. No, nothing's moving forward, so now it's like, now there's no rules. There's literally no rules, because they've already made the decision you can't take this to the Destiny 2. So let's just make a fun sandbox and bring everything back. Like the blue flame. The blue flame on the head is back. You get the XP. Yeah, complete the Nightfall, you get the blue flame and the XP buff, which we're all high level anyway, but still, it's just something that's part of Destiny.
Chris has a wake me up when Destiny 2 comes out look on his face right now.
Yeah.
I honestly, everything you're telling me is like, it's really cool, because it was the Destiny wish list of everybody for the last 2 years. You know, like, oh, if they just brought this back, oh, if they just, so they're throwing the kitchen sink, which I get. Like, it's, they're trying to draw traffic back. They want you to use the microtransactions, which basically keeps the lights on.
Yeah, so that's a big thing. Bringing in a new microtransaction thing, that's a big thing. I'll do jumping jacks right here on the screen. But the one thing is, Twilight Garrison can take shaders now. That ugly exotic that it's always on my Titan 100% of the time now can take shaders, so it doesn't look ugly anymore. Yeah, it can take a shader, so that's great.
So one of the things that I...
Two trains of thought lost. Chris!
No, it wasn't no. So, go! Damn, this episode's sucking with that. One of the things that I typically have, like, a bunch of bazillion stuff to talk about in the Game On Factor. I haven't had a chance to do much. I did do some gaming on a certain day of the week, Wednesday. I did just want to do about the only thing we can say, which is Wednesday they had a 24-hour Sea of Thieves alpha test. And, yeah, I'm just saying that was what I was doing.
Yep. As of this point, we've all played the Sea of Thieves alpha, and I can say 4 of the 5 of us really liked it. I definitely will be buying that game from just a little bit of alpha I played. But, sales dropped in Japan due to undersupply of the Switch. Nintendo's big thing is keeping supply low drives up demand. But if you can't even keep up and drop sales, what's going on? Chris, what are your thoughts on the Switch? You have one.
Yeah, I had a... It's been a difficult challenge to get a Nintendo Switch. I feel like Nintendo is just in a spot right now where it's a brand new console launch, and so it's difficult to get these out to the general public as it is. It only has one game. It's going to drop for a bit. Within a month, you're going to see Switches available. You can already start to see resupplies starting to come out right now on the Pro Controller and on Breath of the Wild. So is it going to drop in Japan due to supply? Of course, it's going to drop in the U.S. due to supply right now. Nobody's buying them, so the sales are going to drop because there's nothing to buy. So as soon as there is availability again, you'll watch everybody repurchase them, because if you saw the news outlet that showed that they had over 2.5 million sold already, it's because that's what they had produced. So it's just a matter of supply and demand right now.
Right now, the demand is coming from Breath of the Wild. It's a Breath of the Wild port to be able to play it. And if somebody doesn't have a Wii U like I happen to have, and you're hearing all the Breath hype, and you're just like, all right, I got to get my hands on it. And somebody has that cash burning a hole in their pocket, that's their market right now. Because between now and what's the next big drop? What, Mario in the summer? Like,
the next big drop, Mario Kart.
Ribbon Hands.
Yeah. Ribbon Hands. Oh, come on now. I'll tell you what. It's a really good game.
Battle. Yeah, oh yeah, just
it's
arms.
Yeah.
Okay.
Arms. Yeah. Yeah. But Arms is a good game. However, the next big drop for them is going to be Mario Kart. And then the next game after that would be Splatoon.
See, that's the one that I like. As much as I love Zelda, Splatoon, that I wanted a Wii U just for Splatoon. So the Splatoon thing is a very, very like on the cusp of making me say, hey, is there a way that I can get some overtime so that I can
get it?
I can grab a Switch for that game.
I'll tell you what the Switch has going for it. The reason why the Vita failed is because it was just an indie machine and it didn't have any AAA titles. Nintendo Switch has AAA titles and is an indie machine. So it carries all of the indie titles that would normally go to PlayStation Vita, but it also has the Nintendo AAA games that come along with it. That's how this machine's going to survive.
Yeah, but will it get third-party AAA games? Because Nintendo AAA games come up few and far between. They don't have a good cadence of releases.
The thing of it is they have such a cadence of these indie games. Just being at PAX East, the amount of indie games and the availability of indie games, a lot of and what feel like on-the-go games. I played Death Squared, which is not a Nintendo Switch game as of yet, but feels and felt like I played Flippin' to Death, which it was a Nintendo Switch game. I played a game called Last Light, that feels like a Switch game. And all of these developers are saying, yep, we want to go to the Switch. Yeah, we're working with Nintendo right now. If you can get 6 to 7 hour games available for the Switch and which, if you know, the battery length is lasting about three to three and a half hours. For a lot of these indie titles, it's lasting even longer. That's taking a full game, being able to play it on a flight for $15. That's not a bad deal.
Right. And basically, and I made this joke last episode when we were covering it, but it's a gaming tablet with controllers on it. And if they market games like that, if they market mobile style games, then they can find their niche. But if they try to compete and try to stand side by side and be in the same marketplace as the big console games with the big AAA titles that have the big scope, then or the big graphics, I should say, because Zelda has amazing scope, then this, and Mario does too, they're gonna struggle.
But one hand follows the other too with this. So if if developers see that Breath of the Wild is able to carry the Switch to 2.5 million, then a third-party developer is going to say to themselves, well, that's a market that I could be missing out on. So the more indies that sell, and then the more AAA titles that sell, means the more third-party developers start to come involved, because they don't want to miss out on this market. They don't want to miss out on cash. Nobody wants to miss out on money. And when I was talking to devs at PAX East, the Switch is not that hard to develop for. It's actually fairly easy to develop for. So it makes it even easier for these third parties to down-res some of these games to a 720 to make them work for the Switch. They don't have to be touchscreen. They just have to do what a normal game does, especially if you're using the Pro Controller, which is a 360. It's basically a 360 controller.
Except for the buttons, it's the X, Y, B, A. Yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing. As I looked at it, I'm like, oh.
I would like to see mobile games make the transition, like some top-tier mobile games make the transition too. If somebody had a top-tier mobile game that was designed for
like
iOS,
Star Wars
Android,
ones,
and make that transition. I think because of the mobility of the Switch, you now have a good control system besides having to build it in with the touch. You have those controls. I think that could have a marketplace for it as well.
Yeah, like the Telltale
sure
games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good call. Oh, yeah. That's a big deal.
Did you guys see that the Telltale, speaking of Telltale, did you see what recently was announced?
Yeah. Their CEO stepped down.
The CEO just stepped down. And I'm just sitting there thinking, because there's another thing I was going to talk about with some of that that's going on with Game On, is I have still been playing the heck out of Lego Worlds. And I have, we made a joke about when we were talking about different things in marketing and how they're going to do things, because it says like scan code and things like that on there. It's a rumor right now, but it's sounding like it's truth, is that Lego Dimensions is being canceled, which basically is stating the Toys to Life is going out, because it's like, I still got all my Disney Infinity stuff here next to me that I absolutely adore, but it's like, I also have a crap ton of Skylanders that are just sitting in a box. They look cool, but I've been checked out of that game for a while now, and I think that's the next one to go. But because if you take something that's Legos, I mean, what happened was they were
more overpriced.
And more people, if they did buy them, they wait till the sale price went down. People would buy them for the minifigures and stuff, and they were getting these characters cheaper than that you could buy like a minifigure pack. When they would go, when they'd buy them on sale, so they were losing money in comparison to if they were just to sell the toys. Now they got this thing called Lego Worlds, which is like Minecraft, like this, that all they gotta do is put a code in there, and they can sell for the same price, even maybe up at $1 and or two, and people will buy them. And then they're like, oh, I get these characters and these weapons in my game now. And the game is selling for $30. And I would pay $60. I'd pay full retail price for this game. This game is awesome. The only thing they need to do is they need to up their player count, and they're already working on that. But it's like, you can build stuff and go into first person view. I've been doing that a lot lately. Like I actually built a couple items that I remember building as a child and think it was so cool, even though it was like a cutaway house. It does not make sense in the game when you're trying to like keep other bad guys out, but I just did it for fun. And then I went into first person view, and I'm walking around as a little Lego guy, walking around seeing everything. And it's that in itself is pretty cool. And I think that's where Telltale's is going to be pushing their selves towards at the market.
I got a chance to go to the Telltale panel at PAX East, which was awesome. It was an introduction into storytelling. What was really nice is the fact that they talked about Guardians of the Galaxy as a new... What was even nicer was they also had the head of Marvel Studios. He was there, the one who created Guardians of the Galaxy, because when he was in the comics, and he was in the comic side for a very long time before he moved over to the video game side, and they asked him how he created Guardians of the Galaxy, and so he had all of Marvel's books all wide open, and he was handpicking characters from the 60s, 70s, and 80s that were just like kind of, randomized. And his wife was like, "Is that a squirrel?" And he goes, "No, it's a raccoon." And so, like, they handpicked. And so he talked about how he came up with how he chose Groot and why he chose all of the characters. And it was just really, really interesting. And the passion that comes across, and also the freedom that they give to Telltale. Any of the series that Marvel sends over Telltale's way have nothing to do with the Marvel universe. They're the Marvel Telltale universe, but not as
that
part,
is awesome.
Not part of the MCU. So it's really, really cool on how they give the freedom to these developers. And he again reiterated, "We want to work with badass developers creating badass items." And these are his exact words. "And we want to give them the freedom to be able to do so. And so we're only going to have partnerships where it's going to be beneficial to the both of us, and it's going to grow the product." And so South by Southwest this week, they're going to have the first presentation. So you're going to see that hit this weekend of Guardians of the Galaxy, because I got a release on it saying that they were going to run it at South by Southwest. So you're going to see it.
That's sick. I haven't jumped into a Telltale game in quite a while. I play, and that will get me to jump in, because I love Guardians of the Galaxy. I have two Guardians of the Galaxy figures sitting up here on my wall. That were part of my 33rd birthday cake. Groot was made out of candy bar, so I ate that. But
the thing that's going to be even more badass about this South by Southwest is the fact that they're going to run the first episode of the series and have the entire crowd play it, so that they're making decisions.
Are they going to do the vote?
They're going to do the voting for the whole entire
thing.
That is
awesome.
So he was like, "They don't even know it's coming yet." But obviously, if you watch the Twitch stream, you'd see it. But so they're going to do it. And he was like, "It's unheard of, because it's still almost in like a semi-alpha/beta phase. I mean, you can play through it, but it's not going to be, completely buffed out." So really, really cool stuff from Telltale. I always love their stuff. I got a chance to ask the creator who's working on Frontier from Telltale for The Walking Dead about the decision to keep Clem in the game, which for me was a big deal. And so I won't get into any spoilers. I'm going to leave it for what I'm writing. But needless to say, it was not an easy decision.
That's awesome. That's going to be a fun time for people at South by Southwest, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's
right?
Awesome. And South by Southwest is a tough one to get into. I went to South by Southwest about 7 years ago. And it was tough to get tickets to go to anything in there, because everything was spread out across the city. They had the main event center, but you had stuff spread out everywhere. And like, so much of the stuff was already bought out, so you couldn't get into all the events. So I got into a handful of things, saw some cool stuff.
I'm super, super bummed out, because Remedy is going to be at South by Southwest, and they're going to do what it's like to be a AAA studio in an indie world. Because of the stuff that they do, and I'm super, because Sam Lake is going to be there, the head of Remedy, and I would literally give anything to be at that panel, because I'm a huge Remedy fan.
So, one I wanted to ask you, did you hear anything? Was Respawn, were they at PAX East?
They were not.
Okay, because if I was reading correctly, they're supposed to be at PAX West, and they're talking about the different titles they're currently working on. Did you know Respawn's working on a Star Wars title? Yeah, so they're talking a little more in detail on it, and they're going to announce E3 will be the big announcement, but we're going to get to see more at PAX West, so that will be something that will be a lot of fun. Nice.
Now, our last game in Game On, Breath of the Wild. All right, Chris. Let it out, man. I waxed poetic last week on this game. Tell me what you think.
Do you use the HUD or do you go HUDless? I took the HUD right off.
Oh, no.
I don't use it. I have no HUD. I have no idea where I'm going. It's awesome. Like, that's how I want it. I want to be able to take a look at the landscape and be like, all right, this is west, this is south, you know, this is east. Let's just figure it out. Every time you spin around.
So what we're saying is Chris's cut.
Yep. Well, you know where the castle is. So that's basically the North Star. And then you just kind of make everything else, you figure it out from there.
I use the marking, the tagging. I tag stuff all the time with my giant iPad. Link takes out his giant iPad. He looks where he's gonna go. Like, all right. And if I'm following something, I'm doing a certain thing, I'll look to my left and like, I want to check that out later. I'll take it out, tag it, mark it as something, and then I'll go get that later. I finally figured out, like, you know, if you stand on those leaf things and it shoots out like a yellow ring, I finally figured out what that was because I stood on one time. It did a thing. I was like, I'll check that out later because that's too far away right now, silly thing. And I ran about my way.
Cajun, I have a weapons pro tip for you. So if you're fighting against a character that's higher level than you and you're getting your ass kicked, bring out a stick, throw it. The NPC will go and try to pick up the stick so it'll have a lesser weapon. And then you can kick its ass because you'll flip back over to whatever weapon that you have is higher, because they'll try to grab like whatever weapon you throw on the ground. They'll go for
even if they have a current
so,
weapon.
I learned that lesson while I was there because I was playing with a bunch of people that were playing. They're like, hey, if they have a weapon or if you knock it out of their hands, like if you knock a weapon out of their hands, mm-hmm. right, and you throw like a stick down, like a branch or one of those skeleton arms, just throw it on the ground. They'll go for that next. And so their weapon is literally that powerful. So, like, when they're hitting you, that's what they're trying to attack you with. It's pretty awesome.
Man, you guys are really, really, really making this difficult on me, not having one of these. Like,
yeah, it's...
This is very difficult. I'm cooking up some spicy PlayStation.
Oh, yeah. I'm cooking up all kinds of stuff. I finally made some dishes that come out as, like, pixelated mush. And I was like, oh, it's only get one heart for that? Oh, yeah. But the cooking in the game, once I figured out, like, okay, wait. They keep telling me that if I cook this, where do I cook it? Well,
I found that guy's house early, man, because it was really cold trying to climb up that mountain. I was like, it's kind of cold up here, and I kept dying, and I kept trying to eat apples. I'm like, this is not working out well. So
you suffer from heat and
the
cold.
The environment
damage?
Matters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
environment
when
matters.
It rains.
That's cool. That's like a survival. Now you're talking like survival, and I love myself.
That's
survival
just the
games.
Icing, dude. When it rains. The water makes climbing more difficult. Like the sheer cliffs, you'll just slide down. You can't climb as easily when it rains. Cold enemies in the cold are more susceptible to warm damage, which makes sense, but it actually happens. But you need warmth. Like you need to wear like a winter coat, which sometimes has like less armor, but you can also eat like spicy or hot food and that'll warm your core. And you can go.
It warms my belly up. That's like hot, some spicy nachos makes your stomach
exactly.
warm.
Exactly. Hot needs cold.
It also makes your ass warm later, but you know, I'm
so
not
like
saying.
Enemies that are in the cold side, I'm hitting them with like ice weapons now. It freezes them. It does more damage to them, ice arrows and stuff like that. But if it's too hot, the environment matters. If you have wooden equipment and you're going into an environment that's too hot, you actually have a temperature gauge in your HUD. If it goes to too hot, you can see the weapons in your thing. They will start. Like just equipping like wooden gear will catch fire.
It's awesome.
One more thing about
Have you done the shield? Have you been shield?
Yes, I did.
Yet?
But one more thing about hot stuff: you can cook food on the ground if you're like near the volcano or so hot. You don't need like a special thing. You can cook food on the ground, or if your enemies drop their stuff, you have to hurry up and pick it up or burn. Like it'll just literally catch fire. And just like burn up.
I just chase after hogs, man. I took my staff and I was
no killing pigs.
Oh,
no killing pigs.
Pig down.
Foxes.
Listen, how do you think I got warm after the first time you get warm? Got to get that pig meat because that's how.
No,
go find
yourself a tauntaun.
I threw a little spice on it and boom, I was nice and toasty, able to get up and so I could go and get the last piece.
Oh,
because I already had the magnet.
I just let cute foxes run by and stuff like that. Oh, it's a cute fox. I'm not gonna kill that thing. Like. I can actually cook that and give me some hearts later. Cute fox. Sorry, cute flamingo. Your food. So you know, I got like wooden items in the heat. If you have any metal on and a thunderstorm rolls through, lightning will strike you. So you better have wooden gear or non-metallic armor and non-metallic gear on, because you will get struck by lightning in a heartbeat.
See, I have stayed so in, like, I have tried to stay so much in the, like, the non-know about, in the dark about this, because I just, I don't want to want it, because Zelda has always been a big deal to me, and so, and I missed out on, like, there's three titles I missed out on that were big titles, and it was killing me. And I actually got them for my son, and I played them on the Wii, excuse me, with him. And so I got a little bit of that, but man, this is all this talk is just.
I got you, Damien. I got a cheap solution for you. Go play Oregon Trail and then watch Top Chef. Done.
Yes.
Done. or I could just go play Final Fantasy. You know, I have that. Mashup. And I could just go in there and I can make some food that really looks freaking amazing, not pixelated mush.
I got an option for you. It's a GameStop centric option. Buy a Wii U, Breath of the Wild for Wii U, play it, return the Wii U. It's the cheapest option available. It's less than $360 for the Switch. I don't know how much you're gonna get for the return. There you go. But the thing is, you're going to be months later to return it, because I don't know how you can finish this game. Because, like, I finally broke my level 50 sword that I've been keeping, I mentioned last episode, because I needed the chest piece for the climbing gear to get the full set. And I was like, I couldn't find it. So I just looked online, like, where do I get this thing? And I was like, oh, it's at that place. It's like, it's a shrine that it was like, it had like, it was called a major test of strength that had like a tough, tough boss. So I took on my level 50, beat that sucker down, and finally got the rest of my climbing gear. But, oh, man, I missed my big sword.
There's nothing worse than losing a weapon that you love, too. It's like, it tells you, too. It's like, oh, it's starting to get a little weak. And you're you're like, I love that one. And so you start filtering through, like, all of your weapons. And you're like, do I got any bows or anything I can use? And then you don't have anything. I swung that big hammer and axe. You know when you swing that axe? He spins around in a complete circle because it's too heavy. Yeah, it's too heavy, so he starts spinning around in a circle. I'm telling you, the little intricacies of this game is the reason why, Big D, we were talking about Mass Effect Andromeda, and that's the part. That's what I'm saying. Like, this game went off the beaten path, right? And so games run into this thing where you can either be too samey-samey or you're too far off, and it's not the same game. And so that's where kind of Mass Effect is right now. People are either going to be pissed off because it's either too Mass Effect or it's not enough Mass Effect. This game is not enough Zelda, but Zelda all at the same time. And everything that they put into this, you can see the care and the love that was put into this. So that's what makes me nervous about Andromeda and all of the responses people are giving me about voice acting and about all the jitters and the stutters and all of the walking and all the movements. It's just like, man, if Nintendo can get this right, why can't you
with
guys?
Tech speak.
Like, why? And
it's 99% yes. Tech speak. Yeah.
See, Andromeda's got me excited for one main reason. And I've talked to a few streamers that are playing it. And we actually were joking about this fact, too, because these streamers happen to play the game that that it's being compared to. The multiplayer in Andromeda, and actually even the single player, the movements and everything, are being compared to Warframe. Because of that, it actually piqued my interest. And then the guy, one of the streamers, first thing he says is, he goes, well, how much do you got invested in Warframe? And I go, well, I got a few Warframes, some of that. He goes, well, technically, I would probably just play Warframe. He goes, but, you know, it's pretty and it's fun and it's new. He goes, if you can get it, he goes, get it. And I have a half off discount at GameStop for a hard copy. This won't be something I get digital. I'll just buy it on disc because I can get it for half off.
No, thanks. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not bad mouthing it by any means. All I'm doing is just talking about the stuff that, you know, has come across and that I've seen. And so it just makes me leery. No, I've watched an hour's worth of gameplay on top of the fact that if you watch GameStop, GameSpot, pardon me, did a review of the first 2 hours, and some of the reviewers had actually played up to like, I think, 8 hours. When they were showing gameplay of Andromeda, they were like, oh, it's the feed. Maybe it's the feed that's causing the stutters. The camera guy was like, no, that's the actual gameplay, which is causing the frame rate drops that are going up and down and up and down and up and down. And then you're watching the eye movements. And then, of course, the meme today about the whole the face thing, you know, my face is too tired. So, which is was a big meme all day long on Twitter after they posted it. It's just, it's been bashed for the vocals. It's been bashed for a number of things. But again, you never know. You never know.
Like I said, it's tough for me to put down Breath of the Wild, and playing with clanmates and raids and Destiny is going to be good. But yeah, Mass Effect Andromeda is not the one that's going to pull me away. Because I just found the Master Sword. I don't own it yet, but I found where it's at. I can't get it, but I found it.
I went so far
out of my way to find this other character. Like, I need this thing. And I finally found this other character. And I was like, is that the freaking Master Sword? And I like turned the corner, and sure enough, there it was. But I can't get it yet. It's exactly where it...
Hashtag Cajun spoilers. I didn't even know there was a Master Sword in the game.
How can you not know that? It's in all the pictures and stuff.
Yeah, like, whatever... Like, I thought about this, but it's in, like, the special edition. You get a Master Sword thing, like, and where it's at in the game. You get exactly where it's at in the game as a little thing to put on your desk in the special edition. So, yeah. That's the only reason why I said it.
That sounds cool. Really, I know that we're going to hear more about this as we go along, so it'll be interesting to have you guys kind of go back and forth and do your what's in what version. Now I think it's time to get into the hype train.
First thing in the hype train is Warner Brothers has announced that they're pursuing a Matrix reboot. It's getting a script and a plan, and they are pursuing Michael B. Jordan to be courted for the star. To me, Michael B. Jordan being courted for the star means a Morpheus origin story, which I am all about. What do you guys think?
That... I wouldn't have thought about that, but that would actually be pretty, that'd be pretty slick. A Morpheus origin story would be cool. And here's the thing, is that there's been multiple Neos. So Keanu Reeves has even talked about wanting to go back in to play his Neo. Mm-hmm. There's been multiple the ones, and so they could do the Morpheus origin story, and Morpheus was woken up by one of the ones,
right?
And so if they did that, he could come back in. Keanu Reeves could be Neo.
Yeah, and they can reboot. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, dude, this is So yeah, originally when I saw it, I'm like,
the meta.
Scratch. The original was great. I even liked Matrix Reloaded number 2, Matrix 3, Revolutions. I didn't, but I liked Matrix 1 and 2 a lot. And that plot line right now. Do you have to say the Wachowski brothers?
Wachowski.
We just call it that. Yeah, don't. Brother and sister now. They are not writing or directing any of it as of yet. Warner Brothers said that they would like their blessing, but it's kind of rumored that it's not necessary for it to go forward. Uh-huh. So it doesn't look like they're going to be involved at all with this project. And but just what we talked about here, a Morpheus origin story going into like that with Neo waking up, I like it. I like it. But let's see what happens, because right now that's all speculation. But we do that pretty good here.
Now, yeah, we do. We're pretty much batting, I think, we're at 90 percentile.
I have no statistics to prove or disprove that otherwise, so I'll take it.
I was keeping track for quite a while, and I know there's been a couple times where it usually what happens is that there's someone there's a couple of us on the cast that may be wrong, but it's usually a 50-50 split on that someone's got it right. And so for the most part, the as a whole,
as long as someone gets it right, we get it right. Got it.
Yes.
Now a trailer dropped for a movie called Coco. And it's a new Pixar movie. comes out November 22nd of this year. It feels a lot like The Book of Life. Anybody seen The Book of Life 2014?
Yeah, that's the one with Channing Tatum.
Yep, has a little Grim Fandango. It's can we do a major cartoon based in Mexico without centering around the Day of the Dead? It seems because there's certain cultures, there's certain things in certain cultures that there's always a theme to, and with Book of Life being the last major cartoon based in Mexico, this one being the very next one, they both have a Spanish guitar playing main, and he gains access to the world of dead to help his friends and family, and it seems like a clone with minor twists, kind of like a lot of those movies that were coming out in like the early noughts and late 90s that were clones of each other. Penguins, Happy Feet, was that one? Volcano and Dante's Peak and stuff.
So what I'm curious about is if it's connected, or you know how sometimes the different studios will base it off of some lore story. And so if it's so close to the Book of Life, is it based off the same origin story? Is it based off of the same, you know, the same legend or something like that? And then this is Disney saying, hey, you know, we're going to do our own take on it.
Or could a Coco be in production and then all of a sudden Book of Life comes out and they're like, what? Like somebody had the same thing. Or it could have been one of the many things we hear in Hollywood where somebody was pitching a guitar playing mariachi going into the world of the dead, and Pixar not getting the rights to the script. Whoever did Book of Life gets the rights to that script, and then Pixar is like, screw it, we'll do it ourselves, which happens. You hear stories of that happening all the time in Hollywood, which is why you get so many duplicate movies, because they'll read that script, they'll like it, get into a bidding war, not get it, and then hire their writer to spit out something faster or a similar time frame, thinking they can do it better because they want to do it too.
Two Steve Jobs movies.
Yeah, speaking of clone movies, Baby Driver trailer, how is that not Ryan Gosling's Drive? That is a clone.
But you know what also I find funny is that the lead actor in it, his clothing is very reminiscent of Han Solo, and he was in the running to be young Han Solo. And so the first time I see everything, I'm like, Han Solo is a pilot, and his outfit looks very similar to Han Solo. I'm like, yeah, come on.
So this the young leads are the dude from the lead from Fault of Our Stars and the girl who played Cinderella in the live-action Cinderella. But those are like the no-name people, which is why I gave their character roles, not their names. But there's like...
He's also from the Allegiant or the Divergent series. Okay.
But they have other big names in this Baby Driver movie, which I was surprised. We're doing a clone of Drive. It's like you get John Hamm, John Berthall, which is Punisher, and Shane from Walking Dead. Must gotta protect Rick! And Kevin Spacey and Jamie Foxx. And this is written and directed by Edgar Wright. And Edgar Wright did the Three Favors Cornetto trilogy, which is Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and World's End. So this is like, these are big names around this thing. Doing a Drive clone? I mean, this dude is so much a Drive clone. He is an introverted getaway driver who falls in love, wants to get out of crime, and then is threatened and chased by criminals. It's a clone of the movie Drive with bigger names in the ancillary roles, True. Not the lead role. I got a little excited about that one. It's like, come on, guys. Like, I watched two clone trailers right back to back. I watched Coco, clone the Book of Life, watched Baby Driver. And it has Drive it. It has the name of the previous movie in the title. Baby Driver has the word Drive in it. But it does look like it has more driving in Baby Driver than Drive had in Drive. Drive didn't have a lot of driving.
True.
One Drive scene. But Despicable Me 3 did an extended trailer. This is a longer trailer, and it completely ignored Trey Parker's character, Balthazar Bratt, that we saw in the first trailer, and focused all on Gru's brother, Drew.
Yeah,
so much excitement.
I watched it, and I was laughing because I'm just it's like the yin yang, because it's, you know, you got the dark, Gru's the dark, the black. Now you got the white, and he's got a long blonde hair. You know, it's. But it looks like shtick comedy, but it looks good in some aspects because it's Steve Carell versus Steve Carell. So it's like, I feel like you can't lose there as long as they don't make that the key focus. They need to focus more on the Trey Parker Gru head to head, not be like, oh, a little, you know, a brother trying to, you know, outdo another brother.
I'm concerned because of the introduction of the brother. The first trailer got me really excited because it gave this really interesting, unique villain with a voice actor who is just well loved. Like he's gonna bring so much humor and originality to that part. He's gonna be scene stealing. And to see a trailer like this that doesn't say anything but reference that character, doesn't feature him at all. It's like, are they doubling down on this yin yang brother thing? And is that going to be the main plot? And I think that would be maybe a plot misstep in the show by focusing too much on that. And I think at the end of the day, it's still going to be funny and good. But man, the hype died for me after this trailer. Damien?
Just remember that Pirates of the Caribbean, their first two trailers, did not have Johnny Depp in it.
Yeah, but also I haven't seen the last three movies, so because the second one was very meh for me, and the third trailer was even more meh. So
we talked earlier about King Kong and Skull Island and just how good it is. Well, jumping back into big giant monsters, not talking about Pacific Rim sequel, anything like that. We're talking about general just old school arcade fun. Rampage. Keija, did you play Rampage either on like on the Nintendo, the Super Nintendo, or the arcades?
Much Rampage. Yeah. So much Rampage.
Yeah, it's so and it was just such a fun game. Like I played with my brother and everything. I remember like the first one that came out was on, I think it was on Nintendo. I want to say it was on Nintendo. And you could play only as, I can't remember the characters' names, but you could play as the big gorilla or you could play as.
Yeah, because they didn't go by like the King Kong and Godzilla. They went by other characters.
It was Lizzie. Lizzie was the lizard. I can't remember what the gorilla's name was. But in the arcade game, there was a big giant wolfman monster thing too. And then in the Super Nintendo version, they released it with the wolf, and that was my go-to character. Well, it's been in development for a while. We knew that Dwayne Johnson was connected to it and that there's going to be a Rampage film made. Now, this sounds like it's just going to be like a good time, like just fun. So Rampage got their villain.
Mm-hmm.
Malin Ackerman. Ackerman. Okay, so from like if you've seen the movie The Watchmen, or you've seen like The Heartbreak Kid, she's all over the place with the stuff that she does. She is going to play the head of the scientific organization who creates the beast.
Okay,
and so she'll be opposite Dwayne Johnson's character, who is hunting the beast down or trying to save the world. Now, first off, it's a game to movie, which always kind of teeters, and it's going to be one that's I don't know how they're going to go with this one. Now they have
camp. There's only one way to go successful with this.
It's camp. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Malin can play both. She can do either way, and Dwayne Johnson can as well. And then you have to go camp because when you're going up against, you're going to be compared to things like Pacific Rim. You're going to be compared to King Kong that came out this year. You got things that you're going to be compared to. You got to make sure that you go with what's going to be strong suit for you. You go camp, it's going to do well. But this is where I'm actually pleased with. The director of this is the same one who did the San Andreas film with Dwayne Johnson. And that one I really enjoyed. And so I feel that he can do, we know he can do Mass Destruction on a non, Transformers style.
That's nothing on your end. But what Malin Ackerman was also in Children's Hospital, so camp, very 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 campy hospital cartoon or hospital comedy. So and she's great as a comedic actress in there. So I think when I see that cast and I see a young female as the lead scientist, Dwayne Johnson as the lead, some of the stuff he's been doing lately, especially their spin on Baywatch being pretty camp as well. I can't wait to see that. I think, to me, there's almost no way this is taking with a serious spin. This is going to be camp. And one of these is going to be successful. Battleship wasn't successful. We'll see if Rampage is. And then we'll see if Hungry Hungry Hippos in the future is successful as well. I'm just making a joke with that one. That's not a real thing in production.
I was gonna say, is that gonna be a thing?
We're on pace. We're in a society right now where me saying Hungry Hungry Hippos is a movie in development, and people will be like, I can see that.
Well, yeah, I can see it like being like an animation style, like Trolls. You know, very bright colors. Mm-hmm. You know it. Or they bring it like Smurfs. They bring the hippos into
or be life. Like a Sharknado where it's hippos coming out of the giant hippos coming out of the water, just like eating people with great aggression because they're so hungry and they're just like and like chasing a boat swimming fast and just chomping down like eating the boat piece by piece at a time, like dude, stuff like that could work. A sci-fi channel original Hungry Hungry Hippos.
If you're doing this, you know. Work. If you're going to go there, then we might as well just have a Dig Dug movie. It could be like a reimagining of The Descent.
There is nothing not on the table right now with what we could possibly see. So Wonder Woman Origins, Wonder Woman released a trailer called Origins. So normally you hear Origins, you get a little panic, Wolverine Origins. Oh, but it's just a trailer about her origin story in the movie. It revealed they're going to have a lot about her growing up as a child. What are your thoughts on the trailer?
I think it looks, and I'm afraid, but I think it looks really, really good. And that scares me because I would say it quite a bit now is that given times passed by, I actually really did like Suicide Squad, but it took time for it to grow on me. Something that a lot of films don't have time to do. This looks really good. I want this movie to be as good as this stuff makes me feel it looks. The story seems interesting, like, because, you know, she's not supposed to know how powerful she is. And, you know, they're talking about all that stuff. And just seeing that idea of how they're going to raise her up and train her, I kind of got a 300 feel.
Right.
A little bit.
And I like that. They put a point where we're supposed to be the protectors, but then I see the overarching plot. This trailer kind of gave the overarching plot, and this isn't a spoiler because it's in the trailer, and the overarching plot is she's raised to believe that they're the protectors of the world. And when a pilot from World War I crashes on her island, she realizes they are not protecting the world, and the world's in peril. And so I think she makes the choice to go do it, and I think that's going to be the plot point of this movie, just going by what we've seen in the trailer so far. And so it's not always common to see the origin of a character coming as a kid in this comic book movie. So I think it's going to be nice to see how she's raised. Mm-hmm. You get to see that, how that plays into it. And I think that whole part of this movie, this first act, is going to play really nicely. Then my concern comes because we haven't seen much of the villains. We haven't seen much the second and third act of those conflicts, how that plays, and will it even make sense? The action sequences are going to be great, but how that makes sense, because when the rumors are spinning that the movie is not that great, but it looks good, that has everything lying where the plot has issues. And this comes out June 30th, so it's not that far away.
Yeah. I'm also looking forward to this because I want to take my daughter to this. And, you know, one of the first costumes that she wore was Wonder Woman. And so she's all excited about this. And I just want it to be good because she's excited about it.
And it could definitely still be good for kids' sakes. Like, there's kids that like movies that I just don't like. And for kids' sake, they could like the movie if they're not looking at all the plot holes and stuff that I'm going to be looking for in the movie. Now, what is...
This could be one of those... Oh, right. I was just going to say, this could be one of those films where, as an adult, you watch, maybe you catch some stuff you didn't quite like, but because if your kid likes it, it could be one of those ones where the kids pull you into enjoying the film.
But what we are pretty dang sure is not going to be good is Iron Fist, which is starting as of tonight of recording, the 17th. Metacritic has it at 35%. Rotten Tomatoes has it at 19%. And this is with, like, umpteen critics on Metacritic and like 26, I want to say, at Rotten Tomatoes. So we got a number. It's not just the first handful. Those are incredibly low. And I looked at a couple. These are big name. A lot of big publications have weighed in on it already. Ooh.
I usually don't go by critics standings. You know, I make my own choice. And this is what I say. You know, we can see this. We can talk about. You know, we just talked about those numbers. We as a cast can go and watch the watch it, and then we can go together and decide, give it our own score on the, like, you know, if we can reach it. I know Brandon will probably have the whole damn season
unless it's that bad where he can't
finish
it.
Oh, I didn't.
Now I'll make a comment on Luke Cage. Every single this is our fifth one right now. Every single Netflix show has been worse than its predecessor. If you go by Daredevil being the best and Jessica Jones being only slightly worse, but those two being brilliant, but Jessica Jones maybe being slightly worse, if you go with that as a rating system, Daredevil season 2 was worse than either one of those. Luke Cage was worse than either one of those three. And then are we seeing this deterioration?
Punisher can't be bad. I'm just saying they can't. They can't screw up Frank Castle. If they do, I'm gonna revolt. You're talking to the guy who's got as much to his wife's dismay, has a section in his closet devoted to the Punisher.
They could be throwing A team, B team, C team, and now the D team. When you're seeing this kind of deterioration, we don't know yet, but that's the trajectory. And
oof. Could it be also because of the fact that Iron Fist is more of a mystical power, kind of similar into the same lines of Doctor Strange? And maybe the people that are seeing this aren't people who are a fan of that particular style of storytelling within the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with critics understanding mysticism. I think that... I think where this is coming from and where my concerns were seeing the first trailer was that it wasn't strong. It wasn't well written, well cast, and it's going to not be very interesting. And
the main actor looks very similar to some of the comic book renditions.
But will his fight scenes be great? Because will it be as great of a fight scenes as we saw in early Luke Cage, or early Daredevil, where it had some really great fight scenes.
Yeah,
like are they gonna have great fight scenes in this one? Because this guy, he didn't do action in Game of Thrones. We don't know if he can.
Because that is the thing. Because he was supposed to, you know, your name's Iron Fist. You better be a better martial artist than Daredevil. If you can't pull off better fight scenes than Daredevil, and you're supposed to be this all powerful martial artist, you know, that's going to take away from the character that he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be, like I said, this mystical power, and he's supposed to be kind of the more closer to what the superhero. You know, we got Luke Cage, he's got superpowers. We got Jessica Jones, but he was kind of supposed to be a little more far fetched. Within the
right, he wasn't chemically altered.
Particular team
system altered. Yeah,
yeah.
Right now, I want to be able to watch it and like it, but because how challenging Luke Cage was to finish, how better rated it was than this one is out the gate, I am very skeptical going in, and I'll be curious to see if any of us finish it. So we shall see.
So we're going to. Hopping over into another topic, we got another DC title, Man of Steel 2. Sources are telling that the Kingsman, the Secret Service filmmaker, Matthew Vaughn, is Warner Brothers' top choice to direct Man of Steel 2. That is exciting if they can nail him down. But the problem is right now with directors, if they go after him, they're going to have to know that they have to give him creative control. Because if they don't give him creative control, they're not going to be able to nab somebody that has produced a film that was... It was good, but
you know, how different of a style Matthew Vaughn does than... Like, Zack Snyder did the original Man of Steel, right? Like, those are very, very different styles. Like, incredibly different styles.
How cool could it be? But how cool could be the... You give it... Just the thought process. You give Matthew Vaughn the ability to have creative control. He could write Man of Steel. Like, he could write that boat. He could make sure that that is... Right headed on, full steam ahead.
So Matthew Vaughn does have scale, though, because when I see and I hear Kingsman and Secret Service, I'm like, okay, that had a very specific style, and it could have been written that way. But he also did X-Men First Class. So X-Men First Class is up there. It's like, for me, there's one of my top three of the 9 X-Men movies. Logan, X-Men First Class, and X-Men 2 are my top three X-Men movies. And if you had to sit down and pick which one was my favorite, that would be tough for me because I liked all three for different reasons, and they're way high up there, and all the others fall down below it without a doubt. He did Stardust, and he produced Kick-Ass.
I love Stardust.
So, I mean, he's done some serious stuff. He has a great style. We shall see. So between Stardust, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, and Kingsman, all of those have very different styles to it. So I'm going to retract my original concern about him bringing that style to the universe, that I think them landing him in it and have to give him creative control. I could get excited again for a DC movie with him in charge of it.
The only thing though is it's just, I'm going to hold my, I normally not the one that says I'm going to hold my breath, but I'm going to hold my breath until that movie is done being filmed, because at any time right now in the DC universe, a director could be like, oh, screw you guys, I'm going home. Well,
he has another movie, Kingsman, The Golden Circle, which hasn't had a trailer drop yet. Comes out in October. 2 comes out in October. So.
Oh, that's going to be, yes.
All about the butt stuff.
Going on to another... going into another thing that this is a huge hype train for me, extremely 90s kids rejoice, the Disney Afternoon Collection revisits DuckTales, which they did a remaster of the game, but it has not been on Xbox One yet, and DuckTales Remastered Rescue Rangers. I can't tell you how many times on the Nintendo that I rented that. We should have just bought it, but my brother and I rented it and re-rented it from the store and played that together. That is it's a platformer, but you could pick up your teammates. So like if you're Chip or you're Dale, you could pick each other up and you could throw them. Now that you could be used as a mechanic to be able to get to a different platform, or you could just do it because you're pissed off at your little brother and you want to just see him get angry, so you just throw him off a cliff. That's remastered. That in itself was huge. I remember having the Nintendo Powers that had the screen captures that you would pull open the centerfold and it would come out. You'd have the whole like map for the stage. I remember all that. And so the idea that these games are coming out and it's going to be in a pack, you get Tailspin. You know, kids right now, they know Baloo as being from the real, you know, the actual CGI bear from, you know, from Jungle Book.
And the cartoon bear.
They don't know.
Yeah, he was the pilot.
This is Baloo, the gray Baloo, not the red, you know, which is from Jungle Book, but he also, Baloo was Red Bear in, when he played Little John. But it's just, yeah. Oh,
yes.
I'm so excited.
When
for this.
I saw and this then, post originally, in our Discord, I was like, oh, cool. They're putting the cartoons from those 90s shows into 1080p. And I was like, oh, it's the games? I didn't even know they made those games. That's how out of touch I was.
Oh, Darkwing Duck was great. Darkwing. Yeah. So what Tailspin, what was cool, funny about that is you'd go through different scenes and then you'd be in the ship, and then you got the ship, and then you got this giant head on top of it. And so you'd have, and that it was just kind of like, you know, but it's just good things to be able to play, and especially, you know, bringing in the co-op aspect that they had, and I'm just, it's going to be fun. Like, and then you got DuckTales that's coming out, you know, it's just all the stuff, you know, I said with DuckTales
hype
coming
for
out,
nostalgia.
What else is going to be next? Nostalgia. I'm like, what's going to be coming next? You bring back Tailspin, you bring back Darkwing Duck, like, you know, Mega Duck, you know, the Evil Six, you know, all that stuff. Oh God, so much stuff that I'm getting excited for, because I feel that this bringing these games in is kind of gauging the community. So they'll go by how many people like, you know, what's the ratings on DuckTales the reboot.
Oh,
then they'll gauge by how many people are liking, you
which
know,
one
pick
we'll
up this
sequel.
Game.
Exactly.
Which one of those
gets the most playtime will get a sequel. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we already got Launchpad, so and Launchpad is a swing character between DuckTales and Darkwing. So.
Yes. Now, I watched the crap out of those cartoons when I was a kid. I just didn't play the games. But also, I didn't have much gaming system when I was younger. I was a late bloomer in terms of my parents' adoption of me getting a gaming system. All right, so are we ready to go into This Week in Geek?
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
This Week in Geek, March 16th, 1995. The world's first wiki. Wiki Web was created as Ward Cunningham invites people to add and edit content. A wiki is a database that can be a community collaboration. And Cunningham has said the inspiration for the name Wiki came from the WikiWiki shuttle bus he learned of during a trip to Hawaii. 6 years later, Wikipedia is launched. Although Cunningham, he didn't have any official involvement in Wikipedia itself.
March 13th, 1986, 10 years after the company's founding, Microsoft Corporation stock goes public at $21 per share. It is said that the rising value of Microsoft stock has made an estimated 4 billionaires and 12,000 millionaires of Microsoft employees.
12,000 millionaires just from working at Microsoft. Yeah, now you know why rent's so expensive in your neighborhood, Damien. All right, Damien, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Damien Nash. Also on Geekologist Radio's Twitter, minus the T for character restrictions. And our geekologist.radio.com is still being worked on, but we're up and running toward a point where you can find our most recent episode on there. You can also find it at queuedupmedia.com. And guys, we're also on where? We're on Ninja Pancake. We are on ninjapancake.com, where you can find all sorts of cool casts. You can find Collecting What Remains. You can find my morning coffee with Bombshell Jackets. You can find my evening beverage. So much good content there. Like I said earlier, we talked about Geek Squatch. We talked about there's a lot of this is where Warlock School was, and that was one of my first Destiny podcasts that I listened to. I listened to Remy and all the guys talk about some stuff on there. I mean, this is talking about some good times, guys. Get on there, check them out. Amazing people making amazing stuff. Cajun, where can we find you?
You can find me Twitter on Caucasian State, all one word, all over the Uprising Family Gaming Network. And let's see, where can we find the rest of the cast? Big D, where can we find you?
All right, so thanks, guys. You can find me on Twitter at BigD112358. Also in Uprising Family Gaming, you can check out our clan at UprisingFamilyGaming.com.
All right. Well, we had ins and outs this podcast. We had lots of people come in. A couple people had to leave early for life-related stuff in the morning, audio dropping in and out. This podcast had lots of ins and outs going on, but we had fun. We talked about a lot of stuff, and we covered a lot of things. So for Geekologist Radio.
Episode 30.
Huh?
For episode 30 of
Geekologist Radio. For episode 30. We clocked ourselves. Like, we clocked our podcast. It was just so much. People were just like, oh, I'm done. And just clocked themselves right out. Both physical and mechanical failures out of there. So thanks, guys, for sticking with us. If you've listened to all 30 episodes so far, for new listeners, we hope to give you 30 more. And have a good one. And we are out. That. Chris, it's a lot better having you in this mood than the mood you're in last week, or the week before last.
This is what happens when you're on Dayquil, boys. I'm going to be dead as hell tomorrow.
It's going to be our pre-show drink of choice.
That's why Damien was delaying the start of the show. He wasn't having technical issues. He just wanted to wait for the Dayquil to kick in.
Dayquil.
What was that drink on The Simpsons? The Krusty's drink that he came up with? The Flaming Moe? Oh, no, it was Moe. The Flaming Moe. Yeah. That's what Chris is drinking. He's drinking Flaming Moes. You can actually get, when you're at Universal Studio and you're in Springfield, you can actually get a Flaming Moe. I'm trying not to, a-hole. Now it's ingrained in my head. I'm like, oh, I should say it. But so. You did it.
You may say it as much as you like, sir, and I will say like as much as I like. You like.
Okay. God! Oh, I mine's not Destiny related. I was gonna say something else. So you do your thing.
I'll do jumping jacks right here. You can cut this on the screen.
Ooh.